She paused and fidgeted with her robes, smoothing out fabric that didn't need it. Anyway, one of those essential directives is to prevent hackers and game modders from tinkering around in unsanctioned ways. Cheating the game, specifically. And this... She swept a hand around the cavern. Almost qualifies. The cavern ended in a small cliff, the water from the stream cascading over the side and disappearing into a cavernous black pit without end. There was, however, a rocky slope that led to a dirt path running along the base of the cliff. Otto surveyed it for a moment, but since there was no sign of Cutter or any enemies, he quickly began picking his way down the rocky slope and to the path below. So, to get around the rules and the overmind screening protocols, Abby continued as she followed Otto down, I think the devs probably created these restricted areas with a carefully balanced ratio of EXP, loot drops, and mob difficulty. I'll bet 1,000 gold the algorithm they came up with skirts just below what the overminds will flag as unsanctioned modding. It's still cheating, obviously, but it's really smart cheating. The kind of cheating only insiders could come up with. After a little maneuvering, we made it to the bottom of the treacherous slope, passed behind the cascading waterfall, and started trekking along the path which led into another natural cavern, one littered with torches burning merrily on the wall.
We've got something strange up here,
Cutter called, his voice echoing and bouncing from ahead, oddly distorted by the stone walls. We all picked up the pace a bit, following a natural bend in the cavern, only to stop suddenly in our tracks. Cutter was dead ahead, squat down on his haunches, one hand rubbing at his chin while he regarded a colossal set of double doors at the end of the earthen chamber. They were huge wooden things, studded with bronze fastenings and carved with complex runic symbols. I've played enough MMOs to know we'd finally arrived at the boss's lair. No doubt in my mind. Can you ungag him? I said, hooking a thumb toward the warlock. Abby nodded and complied. I've got a question for you. What were you and your team doing here? I asked, sudden worry tugging at my mind. Anybody could work their way through this dungeon without the help of a mercenary team, I said. So why were you put here? The warlock smiled, a malicious glint in his eye.
We were specifically contracted to help with the thing beyond that door. Before this mission, my team and I were briefed about this dungeon, and your friend is right. This is a very special place. Drastically underpowered mobs scattered throughout, easy kills for weak players, granting significant EXP. But the trade-off? He's a dangerously overpowered guardian. One so powerful, it raised the difficulty level of the dungeon as a whole.
He paused and offered a sly sneer.
And I happen to know that, without me, you don't stand a chance of getting into that room.
He nodded toward the door.
And even if you do somehow manage to find a way in, you'll never get out alive. But, as I mentioned earlier, I might be willing to help, assuming, of course, you can find it in your hearts to work with someone like me. And assuming you're willing to pay my price.
Boss Battle.
Everyone ready?
The mercenary warlock called out. I took a deep, calming breath and stole one last final look around me. Cutter was invisible, as was I, both of us cloaked in stealth. Abby was at my back, Otto my front, with a slew of conjured creatures flanking him on either side. A few walking skeletons with worn swords and basic longbows, a spattering of earth and flame elementals, plus one very angry-looking demonic lord with blackened heavy plate armor and glowing red eyes. minions, summoned by our warlock friend, and future cannon fodder for whatever boss lurked in the next room.
"We are as ready as we will ever be, mercenary,"
Otto replied tersely.
"One more thing," he added, turning and glowering at our former prisoner. "If you betray us as you betrayed your former master, I will find you, and I will end you. One way or another, I will end you."
"Keep me well supplied with gold," the mercenary warlock said, "and we won't find ourselves at cross purposes."
He paused, offering the Risi warrior a tight, feral smile.
"Now, shall we?"
He swept one arm out, muttering some strange spell, a ball of glowing blue light forming around his hand. The massive door, which boasted a complex and unpickable lock, swung open on silent hinges. The warlock hadn't exaggerated in his claims. We literally couldn't have gotten into the boss's chamber without his help. Apparently, the devs for this area had fitted the dungeon's door with one final safeguard, ensuring that only the right person got through. And that safeguard was a custom key, soulbound to the mercenary leader. It was a final stroke of blind luck that I hadn't killed him, or I would have doomed this operation before it ever got off the ground. We were luckier still because it turned out the warlock was willing to sell his loyalty, along with the key, for gold. A bunch of gold. A small mountain of gold. But that was the one thing we weren't in short supply of, thanks to the easily dispatched corrupt Waldgeist. The doors finished opening with a resounding boom, which echoed around us like a warning siren. Otto bowed his head and muttered a quick prayer before heading in, accompanied by the warlock's conjured minions. As soon as they went through the grand entryway, I forged ahead, skirting around a flame elemental and a skeleton, stealing up the left, positioning myself so I could sneak attack when the moment was right. The door led out into another natural cavern, this one dotted with ancient stalactites and stalagmites so large they were nearly columns, which quickly gave way to the ruins of some sort of temple. A massive circular chamber of rough-hewn stone blocks liberally carved with runic symbols and horrifying pictographs, most of them involving human torture and dismemberment in one form or fashion. Bones, yellow with age, littered the floor like trash on a highway. Weak sunlight streamed in from a jagged opening in the ceiling that revealed a glimmer of blue sky. Below, in the center of the temple ruins, illuminated by a single shaft of sunlight, lurked a twisted tree. A bent, bone-white thing like an arthritic finger, its stunted branches devoid of leaves or life of any kind. At the base of the tree, surrounded by knobby roots, sat a heavy wooden chest heavily tooled with gold and bronze script. Whatever was in the box was the real reward we'd come for. But the question was, where was the chest's guardian? Where was the Uber boss? I moved into the room, creeping slowly, continually scanning the space, looking for some telltale sign of our opponent. The room didn't have any nooks or crannies a hulking super guardian might secret away in. As I crept closer, I caught sight of a crude stairway at the back of the temple proper, jutting from the stone, winding its way up to a partially hidden tunnel high in the temple wall. The stairs were partially outlined in purple, meaning my keensight skill had kicked in. I was pretty sure that passageway would, almost impossibly, connect back to the beginning of this dungeon. That or led out directly into the wider world of Eldgard. The game devs for this kind of RPG knew how tedious it was to backtrack all the way through an already completed dungeon, so they often built in a secret exit for player convenience. I caught a brief flash of movement over by the right. Cutter, positioning himself just to the side of a toppled column. Still, though, I saw nothing else. So, I crept closer, and closer, moving toward the stairs. By now, Otto and the minion squad were almost to the treasure chest, their movements marked by nervous anxiety.
"Where's the boss?"
Otto demanded, glancing over one shoulder at the warlock.
"I told you betrayal would be met with swift violence, sellsword."
The warlock shrugged. "Just because I was hired for this quest doesn't mean I know what we're up against here. Not the specifics, anyway."
"The chest, Otto," Abby called. "Open the chest, and I'll bet we flesh this thing out."
The Risi warrior offered a grunt and a curt nod, turning back toward the tree.
"Everyone take your positions," he ordered.
Cutter and I were already in place, but the minions reacted as one, spreading out in a loose arc. The bow-wielding skeletons moved back a few paces so they'd be able to sink in a volley of arrows. The flame elementals, also ranged attackers, took up positions near the left and right walls, giving them a clear line of fire for whatever might appear. The conjured demon and the earth elementals, hulking things of stone and mud with gleaming obsidian spikes protruding from their backs, shoulders, and arms, made a tight circle around the tree. They were the frontline defense. Otto surveyed the scene with a practiced eye, grunted his approval, and edged past the demon and the earth hulks. He knelt in front of the chest, rubbed his hands together, then extended one trembling limb toward the box. The second his thick fingers touched the clasp, the room exploded with movement. The ground trembled, the walls rattled, small baseball-sized stones clattered down from above, while that bone-white tree began to sway and surge upward in herky-jerky lunges. Earth and dirt fell away in a shower as a massive something pulled its way from the ground of the temple. The stunted tree rose into the air, directly attached to a bulbous, misshapen head covered in maggot-white flesh, which was larger than a gas-guzzling SUV. The creature, a greater corrupt Waldgeist, sported a single bulging eye, milky and dead, situated above a monstrous maw riddled with jagged fangs. Its misshapen head sat perched atop a host of octopus-like tree root limbs covered in thorns the size of meat hooks, while more fat tentacles whipped and writhed in the air, sprouting from every free patch of skin. Whatever dev had designed this thing deserved both an award for horrific creativity and also a year-long voucher for psychiatric treatment. Everyone stared for a tense moment, held captive in fascinated horror. That uneasy truce ended abruptly as the creature spread its massive jaws and issued a defiant roar, which rocked Otto back on his heels and sent a tremor running through the floor and up into my teeth. Then the creature surged forward, lashing out with a massive limb, smashing Otto in his breastplate. The Risi warrior let out a rumble of pain as he popped up into the air, cartwheeling head over heels before finally landing in a heap 10 feet away.
"Attack!"
Abby screamed, a thread of fear weaving through the words. The warlock's minions responded to the command. In an instant, everything was pure chaos. All manic motion and whipping tentacles, intermixed with the ring of steel on stone and the blaze of magical power. The warlock's hard-hitting melee minions threw themselves at the creature. Skeletons unleashed a hail of arrows. Flame elementals hurled fireballs. Earth elementals charged the thing with spiked fists upraised, while the demon laid into the freakish beast with its massive two-handed sword. The fury of the warlock's summoned help was truly impressive, but the greater corrupt Waldgeist seemed to shrug off most of their attacks without sustaining much damage. A tornado of flame engulfed Abby, swirling around her as she chanted, arms upraised. A vortex of red, orange, and blue light radiated waves of heat as she blasted out continuous balls of flame, which lit up the room like a shower of falling stars. I just stood there, unsure what to do, how to act. Despite my increased proficiency with the Warhammer, I wasn't a brawler. One hit from those tentacles would likely put me out of the game. The only thing I really had going for me was my stealth attack bonus. And, pragmatically, that was a one-off ability, so I needed to deploy it wisely. Still invisible, I hustled left, behind a fire elemental, then scurried up the winding stairs at the rear of the temple. Otto was back in the fight, hurling himself into the fray, a whirling tornado of steel, his sword flashing out faster than my eye could follow, shearing through a forest of the smaller tentacles with a lazy ease. The warlock also began launching a direct assault, planting his feet shoulder-width apart and machine-gunning his arms like a boxer working a heavy bag, bolts of angry green light flying from his palms. The tentacle beast staggered from the blasts, but fought on, finally turning the earth elementals into rubble piles. I was halfway up the staircase, a solid 10 feet above the hulking monstrosity, when I caught sight of Cutter sailing through the air, materializing as he slammed into the side of the greater corrupt Waldgeist's head, plunging his blade into the beast's single eye. A gout of sickly green gore spewed from the puncture wound like projectile vomit, showering down onto Otto and the summoned demon. Cutter's stealth attack achieved a critical hit and nearly halved the boss's health points, dropping him below 60%. But the thief wasn't done yet. As he dangled from the creature's eye, he pulled the second dagger free and slammed it in next to the first, a snarl on his face. The boss reared back, shrieking in pain and defiance, violently shaking its head, flinging Cutter away like a dog shedding water. The thief tumbled through the air, slamming up against a toppled column with a terrible crack. He wasn't on the ground for more than a heartbeat before a host of wriggling white roots erupted from the floor, ensnaring the combatants below. The creature bellowed again, but this time, the bone-shaking noise was accompanied by a creeping green cloud, an area effect spell. A combat notification popped up in the corner of my eye. Debuffs added. Rooted. Your party has been rooted and is unable to move. Duration, 1 minute. Toxic cloud. Your party is poisoned. 10 points of stamina damage per 10 seconds. 20 points health damage per 10 seconds. Duration, 2 minutes. Death cloud. Instantly kills all summoned creatures. My jaw fell open in shock. Yep, we were dead. So dead. The warlock's remaining creatures keeled over, dropping to the ground, each dissolving into a pile of harmless dust. The rest of my teammates were on the floor, downing potions to fight off the toxic cloud's effects, battling to stay alive. I, however, wasn't affected. My elevation above the fight kept me clear of the deathly green fog and the ensnaring tree roots. That was a huge break, but it also meant this fight was now firmly on my shoulders. If I didn't do something, my party was toast. But what could I do against a thing like that? If I headed down into the thick of things, I'd likely be poisoned, rooted, and killed. And since I couldn't access my Umbra Bolt skill, I didn't have any kind of range attack to employ. I wrestled with what to do for a beat longer, knowing every second I wasted could mean the difference between life and death for someone below. Then, it occurred to me. There was one thing I could do. One reckless move that might pay dividends. I threw myself from the edge of the stairs without a second thought, falling like a stone, slamming the spike of my hammer into the boss's skull as I landed on top of its head with a wet thwack. I threw my whole body into the strike and unleashed my savage blow attack. That, combined with the added damage from the stealth attack, dropped the creature's HP to 35%. Once more, the greater corrupt Waldgeist began shaking its head, whipping back and forth, trying to buck me to the floor where it could crush me underfoot. Try as I might, I couldn't keep my feet, and before I knew it, I landed on my belly, clinging desperately to the warhammer still lodged into the creature's skull, using it like a climbing pick. The beast bellowed again, bucking up, then slamming down, but I refused to let go, refused to be shaken, to fall, to fail. The chaotic bucking seemed to last forever, my body flopping like a rag doll. And just as I thought my grip was going to give out, the beast settled back down, returning his attention to my teammates as his root spell wore off. Otto and Cutter were still down and chugging potions, but Abby was somehow back on her feet, throwing fireball after fireball, shaving off points with every hit. With the creature's focus once more elsewhere, I clumsily crawled to my knees and pried my weapon free with a jerk. Fetid gore, dark and viscous, oozed from the wound. Then, while the creature swayed and fought, I started hammering at the withered tree trunk protruding from its skull, pounding over and over again with the face of my hammer. Thud, thud, thud. Each blow, though clumsy and ungainly, knocked off a noticeable chunk of its hit points. Finally, a weak spot. All bosses had a weak spot, and usually it was in the most annoyingly difficult place to reach, like a gnarled tree on top of the boss's head. I sunk my hammer home one more time, twisting my torso, throwing all my weight into the blow. A crack reverberated in the air as the trunk shattered and tumbled. The creature bucked below me one last time as its HP bar hit zero, before pitching forward like a felled tree. Unfortunately, despite my victory, there was no graceful way off the boss's back. The fall flung me into the air, my arms flailing as I flew, the ground rushing toward me at an incredible rate.
"Don't worry, friend,"
Cutter called out, stepping into view, a devilish grin plastered all over his face.
"I've got you."
He thrust out his arms as though to catch me, then, at the last moment, stepped aside. I face-planted into dusty earth, stars exploding in my eyes as a stunned debuff flared in front of me. Ouch, did that hurt. My head ached, my ribs were tender from top to bottom, and generally it felt like someone had pushed me down the side of a steep mountain. I coughed, rolled over, and grimaced as Cutter offered me a hand.
"What I meant," Cutter said, "is let me help you up."
"Thanks, jerk," I muttered, reluctantly accepting his hand, letting him pull me to my feet. He clapped me on the shoulder, grin widening.
"You'll be fine, Grimjack. Besides, what do I look like? That meathead over there?"
He motioned toward Otto, just now pulling himself from the dirt and rubble.
"Me? I don't catch fallen damsels in distress," he said. "I rob them and sell their jewelry to the highest bidder. On an unrelated note, good work with the boss."
He clapped me on the shoulder again.
"You're not as completely worthless and incompetent as you look, which is truly the highest praise I can give someone."
"Wow, Jack!"
Abby ran up to me and hit me with a fierce bear hug that hurt my already tender ribs.
"That was incredible. Seriously, how did you ever think of that?"
"Lucky guess," I offered, carefully prying her arms off my torso.
"Well,"
she beamed at me like a ray of sunshine,
"I don't care how you did it. That was a brilliant move. Seriously, epic."
She leaned in and pecked me on the cheek.
"I knew I picked the right guy for this. Now, let's go see what's worth $20 million.
Our party, bruised, battered, but alive, headed over to explore the vanquished boss. I was dismayed to find he didn't have anything on him except a tarnished gold key, which I assumed went with the chest. I was sure whatever was in the chest was totally worth all this trouble, but I still felt a little disappointed. Bosses were supposed to drop the best loot. That's just the way it worked. Anything else was just an abject failure in the system. Abby held the key in trembling fingers, her eyes fixed on the piece of metal like it was the holy grail of gaming. After a moment, though, she sighed and turned toward me, extending the slip of gold.
"Why don't you do the honors?"
she said with a sad smile. "You sure?" I asked. She paused, twitched her nose, then nodded half-heartedly.
"I think it's for the best. Besides, you deserve first crack at the goodies. You did save the day this time round."
I shook my head, finally clearing the stunned debuff from my fall, then accepted the key and meandered over to the chest, excitement filling my belly. I brushed past Otto and dropped to a knee, sliding the key home, then gave the thing a jiggle and a tug. The lock dropped away and the chest creaked open, an inventory screen popping into view before my eyes as it did. I heard a chorus of whistles echo all around me. Apparently, the whole group was seeing this same screen. And they had good reason to celebrate. There was something for everyone, and it was all ancient artifact gear. Faction Seal. The loot ended up being fairly easy to distribute, since most of the items were class-restricted. Staff of the Enchantress and the Ring of Insight for Abby, Blade of the Ancients and the Amulet of Bloodletting for Otto, Cloak of the Nightborn and the Ice Pick, a sleek, deadly dagger that radiated unnatural cold for Cutter. Even the Warlock got something. A legendary scalable helm called Frightful Visage. My gear wasn't class-specific, a good thing since I currently lacked a class, but somehow the AI seemed to read me like a book and provided just what I needed. First came my new and improved weapon, the Gavel of Shadows, a wicked-looking warhammer of black forged steel with shadowy runes of violet power crawling up the haft of the weapon and twirling around its blunt face. A cruel hooked spike, serrated on one side for sawing, extended from the back, while a second, smaller spike jutted from the top of the weapon like a pointed finger. The thing seemed to radiate dark energy, to pull at the shadows around me and draw them in tight, to harness them. And the stats were as impressive as its formidable appearance.
Gavel of Shadows. Weapon type. Blunt. Warhammer. Class, Ancient Artifact, Two-Handed. Base Damage, 47. Primary Effects. 50 points Shadow Damage, plus 0.5 times Character Level, plus 10% damage to all Blunt Weapon Attacks. Strength Bonus equals 0.25 times Character Level. Spirit Bonus equals 0.5 times Character Level. Secondary Effects. Plus 250 EXP per kill. Plus 29% extra gold dropped. Increases all blunt level skills by 1 while equipped. Can be used with a small buckler, 5% reduced weapon speed.
I also snagged the Ruby Ring of Foxfen, which offered me a 12% increased chance to receive a magical item drop, plus 8% critical hit chance, plus 10% to all primary attributes, minus luck, and plus 1 to luck. These prizes were a truly huge find. Certainly the kind of thing only the highest level players were likely to stumble upon, and then only after murdering a major level boss. Still, as great as all of the loot and easy EXP was, it hardly seemed like the kind of gear that had run someone 20 million real-world dollars. Which meant the EXP and loot had to be the frills. Bonuses to sweeten the pot, but not the major ticket item. The only other thing in the chest, though, was a worn gold talisman, the size of an antique CD, with the image of a noble-faced man in profile on one side and a huge tree on the other. The metal trinket was inscribed around the edge with the Latin phrase, Imperatorius Factio Signum on the top and Domino est Terra on the bottom. The dual phrases appeared on both the front and back. Otto succinctly informed us the words meant Imperial Faction Seal and Lord of the Land. The only problem was no one knew what it was for. The NPCs had never heard of the thing, and Abby, an actual game dev, had never seen the feature either. A true mystery, only bolstered by the fact that the item came with exactly no description whatsoever. Despite that, it was clear the strange talisman was the real prize, since that was the only item no one could place. The mood of the party was equal parts excited and subdued as we made our way up the stairs and through a long, boring stone passage, which dumped us back at the dungeon's entry via a secret door panel. Typical. We headed up topside, everyone letting out a collective sigh of relief as fading rays of warmth washed over us and a cool breeze lapped at exposed skin. We'd only been in the dungeon for a little over 4 hours, but it felt much longer. A short lifetime. Being out in the rolling expanse, with the sky stretching endlessly above and the mountains cutting across the horizon, I felt free, safe. "Well," Abby said, shuffling over to me, eyes downcast, hands clasped in front of her. She glanced up at me, the ghost of a smile lingering on her lips. "I think it might be time for us to part ways for a bit."
"Wait, what?" I asked, genuinely taken aback. "Why would we do that? We worked great together as a team. Jack and Abby all the way," I said with a smile and a fist pump. "We rocked it down there."
"I know," she nodded, before reaching up and tucking a loose strand of hair behind her ear. "And this isn't over, but right now, I think it's best if we divide and conquer. Otto and I, we need to go see some people. Ask around about that weird disc we found. See if we can find out what its purpose is." She rooted around in her bag for a moment before fishing out a curled scroll bound shut with a loop of red silk. "A portal scroll to get you home," she offered. "This'll take you to your bind spot, wherever that happens to be." I slowly accepted the proffered paper, then opened my inventory bag and removed the golden disc. I turned it over in my hand, studying both sides of the strange talisman, before holding it out to her. She grimaced and shook her head.
"Better not," she replied. "I think it's safer with you for the time being. I stumbled on this info by snooping around in company records that, strictly speaking, I wasn't supposed to have access to. By which I totally mean I hacked them. So when Aliejo Carrera shows up here and finds this place empty, he's going to start asking questions over at Osmark Technologies, and those questions will likely point to me. It'll take a while before they find out about you, though."
Her reasoning made perfect logical sense, but there was something off about this whole thing. The way she stood, back slightly bent, hesitant to meet my eye. Abby was a tough woman. You had to be to make it as an IRL girl in a lot of gaming circles, and this didn't seem like her at all. She seemed sad. "I hear what you're saying, Abby, and I believe you. I do. But there's something you're not telling me. Some piece of the puzzle you're purposely leaving out." She paused, chewing at her lip, then nodded.
"I'm coming up on my third day, Jack. Just a few hours away now. That's why I needed you here so quickly. Statistically, 1 in 6 die during the transition, which means in another 5 or 6 hours, I could be dead. Gone."
She snapped her fingers.
"Just like that." "I don't want to put you through that, Jack. I know it probably doesn't make much sense, but if it's my time to go, I want to be alone. So, I'm going to head back to Harrowick, get a good hot meal, and go to sleep. If I wake up,"
she shrugged narrow shoulders,
"then I guess I survived, and I'll PM you. If not, well, know that I wish the absolute best for you.
I wanted to hug her, to tell her not to worry, that things would be okay. They had to be okay.
I couldn't, though, because they might not be.
She was right after all, 1 in 6 died. Statistically, there was a decent chance we would both be dead in another 2 days. So instead of offering her meaningless platitudes, I tucked the disc back into my inventory and asked her what I should do in the meantime.
You need to get a little rest, she replied, and then you need to acquire a class, Jack. As is, if you weren't reasonably smart and passably good-looking, you'd be entirely useless to the party. So, while I do the legwork and turn up leads about what that trinket does, you find out what kind of character you're going to be and start maximizing your stats. I have a feeling things will get really intense around here before long.
She smiled again, a small, sweet thing, and turned to go. She faltered a step away, spun back, and pulled me into a tight hug.
I know we didn't work out in college, she whispered into my chest. But if we both live through this, survive the next few days, maybe we can do things differently this time around.
She tilted her head up and drew me into a soft kiss, her lips warm against mine.
In case this is our final goodbye,
she murmured as she pulled away. She patted me on the cheek, wheeled around, and left. Otto, the taciturn warrior, offered us a grim nod before stalking off after her, leaving me alone with Cutter and the mercenary warlock. A second later, there was a flare of brilliant light, a portal, which fizzled and faded, vanished. It was distinctly possible I'd never see her again.
Unless you plan on killing me, the mercenary warlock pitched in a second later. I too shall depart. Time to spend a little of this hard-earned money.
He tapped a fat coin purse at his side, the clink of gold carrying in the air. We're not going to kill you, I replied half-heartedly, still thinking about Abby. You were good on your word, and we really couldn't have done it without you. Thanks. I mean it. The warlock seemed to struggle with something for a moment, uncertainty playing out across his rough features.
You and your friends aren't so bad either, he said. For being hypocrites, obviously.
He faltered, fingers restlessly drumming on his coin purse.
Listen, if you ever need the hand of an experienced mercenary, you can find me at a tavern in East Harrowick, a place called the Drunken Donkey. Ask for Morgan, and you'll find me. I don't work out of the goodness of my heart, mind you, so make sure you bring gold.
Recruit follower. You can now recruit Morgan Sellsword as an in-game follower. You can find Morgan at the Drunken Donkey in East Harrowick and hire him as a loyal companion for 5 gold a day.
He didn't linger long after that. What about you? I asked, turning to Cutter. You gonna take off too? He folded his arms across his chest.
You must be positively mental if you think I'm going anywhere. First, you helped me break free from that hellhole of a prison, and now, after one mission, I've pocketed more gold than I'd normally see in 10 years. You're my lucky charm, Jack.
He shot me a wink.
You'll literally have to beat me away with a stick if you want me gone. Otherwise, I'm going to follow you around and scoop up the loot you leave in your wake until I can retire fat and happy on a mountain of gold surrounded by beautiful women.
How altruistic of you, I noted, face deadpan.
You know, that's what everyone is always telling me. Cutter, they say. You are one of the shining jewels of humanity. True story.
Yeah, I bet, I replied with an eye roll. He grinned.
So, where to now, Lucky Charm?
I've got a quest to turn in, I replied. Downtime. Cutter and I threaded our way through the forest, backtracking along the path I'd taken earlier in the day, making light conversation as we went. I filled him in on the Cleanse the Taint quest details, then fell silent as he prattled on about beer and gambling, telling me all about how his father had taught him knuckle bones before he was old enough to walk. Once more, I was dumbstruck by the depth of Cutter's character. His memories, his mannerisms, his humor. He seemed more alive, more real than the majority of my real-world friends. I listened more than I talked, constantly scanning the forest for any sign that the corrupt Waldgeist I'd killed earlier had respawned. With the greater corrupt Waldgeist dead deep in the heart of the ruins behind us, however, the forest seemed to be free from the twisted taint. After 20 minutes of hard trekking, we broke into the clearing with the Hamadryad that had offered me the temple clearing quest.
The hero of the hour,
the old tree boomed, mossy mustache fluttering as he spoke.
I had my doubts about you, boy. Even felt guilty sending a whelp such as you out to contend with an evil as powerful as that which dwelt in those accursed ruins. Yet here you are, returned a conqueror.
He smiled big and wide, revealing a mouthful of acorn teeth. A laugh followed, a hearty thing that sounded like a clap of distant thunder.
I can already feel the difference,
the tree continued.
The goodness in the land returns. The earth cries out in joy. The trees shiver in relief. Even the air tastes cleaner as it rushes through my leaves. A genuinely great day for the forest. A great day for me and my kind.
He laughed again, stirring up a chorus of happy birdsong all around us.
Now, I know you're likely eager to get along. You mortals are always rushing about, sprinting from place to place, so quick to move on to what is next, to what is new. So, let me see you properly rewarded before you go.
I cast a glance at Cutter, letting him know to stay back, then edged closer to the towering tree. On the ground, directly in front of the Hamadryad, a green shoot sprouted from the ground, curling up and out, reaching and yearning for the fading sunlight. Vibrant green leaves and barbed thorns bloomed along the stalk. I dropped to one knee, admiring the magical sight, watching raptly as a petite bulb blossomed into a rose so blue it was nearly black, its petals unfurling in triple speed time. Absolutely stunning. When the flower finally opened all the way, I saw the gleam of metal within. A silver cloak brooch in the shape of an intricately worked warhammer, with a fat emerald the size of a dime at the center. The tree nodded at me. Take it. Take it. Tentatively, almost uncertainly, I reached out and plucked the brooch free. The little trophy came away with ease, but an unseen thorn bit into my finger. I hissed as a bead of blood welled at the tip of my digit, then dripped, splat, onto the flower below. The plant trembled in pleasure, pulsing with an eerie light before, promptly, withering, decaying as fast as it had been born. After a moment, nothing remained of the strange flower but a withered pile of mulch.
Questelet, cleanse the taint. You have vanquished the evil presence tainting the forest and have earned the thanks of a powerful Hamadryad. In return, as your reward, you have received 10,000 EXP and the Blessing of the Forest, which instantly improves your relationship with forest-aligned factions from neutral to friendly. You have also been awarded 100 renown
in world fame, for completing this quest. Greater renown elevates you within the ranks of Eldgard and can affect merchant prices when selling or buying.
The tree sighed, content.
Thank you again, traveler, he said. We trees are a close-knit group, and I will spread the word of your help. Even the lesser tree folk, those who cannot speak, will treat you as a friend.
The brooch, called Blessing of the Forest, didn't seem to have any stat bonuses besides improving my relationship with forest-aligned factions. But, interestingly, it was also a soul-bound item, meaning I couldn't drop it. Not even if I wanted to. I nodded my thanks as I pinned the metal brooch in place, then wished the tree a final goodbye, and activated the scroll Abby had provided for our return. The portal dropped Cutter and me off in the alley outside the Broken Dagger. Guess that was my bind point. Must have been some kind of automatic feature, since I certainly hadn't set it there. It was full dark in Rowanheath. The moon was a ghostly sliver in the sky overhead, and a chilly breeze cut through the narrow alleyway, sending a shiver up my spine. At this point, all I wanted to do was sleep for the next few days straight, but first, I needed food. My belly felt like an empty hole, and now that I wasn't preoccupied with other things, like not being murdered, the shooting pangs of hunger were almost unbearable. Curious, I pulled up my character screen and accessed a menu that listed my current active effects. Aside from all the active buffs granted by my gear, I also had a small list of status debuffs.
Current debuffs. Tired, level 3. Skills improve 15% slower. Carrying capacity, minus 25 pounds. Attack damage, minus 10%. Spell strength, reduced by 25%. Thirsty, level 2. Health, stamina, and spirit regeneration reduced by 25%. Hungry, level 3. Carry capacity, minus 50 pounds. Health and stamina regeneration reduced by 30%. Stealth, 25% more difficult. Unwashed, level 1. Goods and services cost 5% more. Merchant craft skills reduced by 1 level.
I grumbled in mild annoyance. What kind of demented person would have thought to add in those types of features? To actually penalize characters that didn't eat or sleep enough?
Cutter pushed his way into the tavern. Music, laughter, and the warmth from the roaring fireplace washed over us like a soothing balm. Cutter was apparently suffering the same negative debuffs as me because he immediately sauntered over to the bar and ordered us food and a round of drinks. Then, promptly acquired us a table near the stage performer. Tonight it was a fresh-faced bard wearing a puffy-sleeved jacket. The bard chanted a story, going on and on about some long-forgotten battle, while a quartet of colorful balls twirled and spun through the air. I gratefully took my seat and remained quiet, lost in the bard's performance, waiting for our food, which came a few minutes later. A hearty meat pie filled with tender lamb chunks and bits of roasted vegetables, all slathered in thick gravy. Sensing my subdued mood, Cutter kept quiet for a change, eating in peace, though occasionally chuckling at the performer or clapping his approval between heaping mouthfuls of stew. It only took me a handful of minutes to devour the food and down a few pints of the Broken Dagger mead, which wiped out the thirsty and hungry debuffs, leaving me in slightly better spirits. Still, I felt tired to the bone, not to mention depressed. So far, it had been easy to forget about the relatively high mortality rate for people transitioning into VGO permanently. But knowing Abby could be dead in a few hours was an uncomfortable and sobering thought. What I really needed right now was to be alone and to get a little sleep. So, with a few quick words, I excused myself from the table and headed up to my room.
Hey, Grimjack!
Cutter called over the music as I made for the stairs. I turned back toward him and was shocked to see something that might have been concern in his face.
Everything's gonna be all right,
he said.
You're going to get through this, one way or the other. And tomorrow, I'll head out with you, help you find a class that'll fit you like a glove. Considering your disposition, I'm thinking servant girl might be a good place to start.
He flashed me a toothy asshole grin.
But we can talk it over in the morning.
I nodded and smiled back, in spite of my disheartened mood. When you got past his rough edges, Cutter was okay. I caught a whiff of myself on the way up the stairs, a pungent mixture of sour sweat and dirt, but decided I could figure out how to bathe in the morning. I'd done enough for one day. My room was empty, the bed freshly made, the pitcher filled with clear water, a clean length of towel lying beside the basin. I shut the door with a kick, beelined for the basin, and splashed my face, rubbing wet hands over my cheeks then down onto the back of my neck. It did nothing to the unwashed debuff, but boy did it feel good. With that done, I headed over to the bed, shrugged out of my boots and armor, and stripped all the way down to a pair of woven undershorts. The only gear I left on was my pieces of jewelry. I flopped back onto the bed, letting the mattress pull me in as I sprawled, stretching my back with a groan. God, what an amazing bed. Whatever evils the devs had done, this bed almost made up for all of them. Almost. Following my ritual from the night before, I decided to take a few minutes to look over my stats and notifications, even if to just clear things out. With another groan, I laced my hands behind my head and called out into the air. Sophia, please bring up my user interface.
Of course, Jack, came the comforting voice of my digital assistant.
The semi-translucent screen popped up in front of me. Notifications, I mumbled. The menu interface was promptly replaced by a long list of boxes.
Time 7, level up. You have 100 undistributed stat points. Stat points can be allocated at any time. You have 17 unassigned proficiency points. Proficiency points can be allocated at any time. Skill, stealth, skill type, level, active, level 9, cost, 15 stamina, effect, stealth, 23% chance to hide from enemies. Skill, backstab, skill type, level, active, level 5, cost, 20 stamina, effect, a brutal backstab attack can be activated while an adventurer is in stealth, 6 times normal damage with a knife, 4 times normal damage with all other weapons. Effect 2. 7% increased chance of critical hit while backstabbing. Skill. Blunt weapons. Skill type. Level. Active. Level 8. Cost. None. Effect. Increases blunt weapon damage by 19%. Skill. Medium armor. Though medium armor doesn't offer the same defensive benefits of heavy plate, it is far less bulky and heavy, granting the wearer decent protection while simultaneously offering a greater range of speed, dexterity, and maneuverability. Perfect for classes that rely on speed and brutal surprise, but also aren't afraid to fight close in, at least for short periods of time. Skill type, level. Passive, level 2. Cost, none. Effect, 10% increased base armor rating while wearing medium armor.
I read over the various boxes, spending a few extra minutes on the medium armor section, then closed out of my notifications. As tired as I was, now that I finally had access to the game's wiki again, I really wanted to look for information on my future class.
Sophia,
I stifled the yawn. Please search for any information on Dark Templars or Shadowmancers, I muttered, both too lazy and too comfortable to switch over to it manually. The screen blinked and changed without a word of reply. A long list of forum topics populated, but it was the page entitled Dark Templar Class Kits that immediately caught my eye. Bingo.
I pulled up the screen and began scanning the information, courtesy of an Osmark tech admin by the handle of Jacob Page.
Lore.
The mysterious Dark Templars, also called the Matal in the Dokalfa tongue, serve as the enforcers of the Shadow Pantheon, the native gods and goddesses of Eldgard. Like the Holy Templars of the Viridian Empire, the Dark Templars are often defenders of the downtrodden, fighting against injustice and upholding the tradition of Eldgard's natives with both dark magic and cold steel. Unlike Viridian's Templars, however, Dark Templars rely not on the power of holy light, but on the sinister and pervasive strength of shadow.
Gameplay.
Dark Templars are a hybrid class available to Wodes, Dokalfa, Merkelves, and Accipiter. Essentially, any natural enemy of the Viridian Empire is eligible to receive this class. Unlike many other classes, players seeking the path of the Dark Templar must locate a Shadow Pantheon trainer and undergo an initiation ordeal to be accepted into the ranks. If they fail the ordeal, the class becomes permanently blocked. If selected, there are 5 class kit specializations: Shadow Knight, Plaguebringer, Umbra Shaman, Necromancer, and Shadowmancer, which allow Dark Templars to fulfill a variety of roles, depending on the chosen kit. Becoming a Dark Templar instantly grants the player a Dark Alignment, which is not the same thing as an Evil Alignment. Possessing Dark Alignment does, however, instantly lower the player's relationship with all Viridian-aligned factions to unfriendly. In return, all Dark Templars receive a 10% damage bonus against light-aligned players and NPCs, making them valuable assets within the Eldgard Rebellion.
Very interesting. Sort of like a paladin class, then, but with a dark alignment.
Next, I pulled up the page on the Shadowmancer kit in particular, since that seemed to be the path I was headed for.
Shadowmancer kit specialization. Though all Dark Templars have a certain affinity for Shadowmancy, the magical manipulation of void and shadow energies, Shadowmancers specialize and thrive in this arena. Like other Dark Templars, Shadowmancers can have powerful melee abilities, but unlike other Dark Templars, Shadowmancers cannot wear heavy plate armor, which can make this kit particularly tricky to play. Because of kit restrictions, Shadowmancers don't make good tanks, relying instead on speed and stealth in physical combat. They also possess a wide variety of spells that can inflict medium to high single-target damage. Additionally, spells such as Umbra Bog, Plague Burst, and Night Cyclone offer Shadowmancers some formidable crowd control capabilities. Advantages: +5% faster movement rate, +1% per 4 character levels, CL,